Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we attitude. We moody, and we go into that fight just to land on the line.
Basketball fans, yeah, it is the NBA podcast here. Sorry, I had to kind of let that intro go because I was taking care of a couple of things that went haywire right before the show, but we're okay. I think we're good to go. Anyway, we're back here. Usually it's called the College Ball Show, but, you know, college basketball is long done, and we're in the full swing of the NBA playoffs, the first round. Marshall and I will talk it through. Sorry about this. I'm still having a little bit of. Yeah, okay, we're good. I think we're okay. We're gonna kind of talk through the first handful of games in the first round. Marshall will be calling in somewhat soon. He's got a teaching gig right now. He's a sub right now, so he's gonna jump in here in a little bit. So I'm just gonna kind of go solo for the time being until he jumps in. And actually, you know, if you've listened to the show, you know he's a Golden State Warrior fan. He's been that since they were, you know, it hasn't been, you know, 20 years like North Carolina, but he's been a fan when they weren't good, right? So that's really tells you that you're a fan of something when they're not good. And you stay with them, you hang out, you stay with them. And then they turn all the way around into what they have been, which is champions last year and a championship-level team clearly this year. However, they do have a possible issue that we'll talk about. Who knows? You know, how serious will the issue be for Steph Curry? Obviously, that's huge. And, you know, maybe they don't need him right now. They lost, you know, last night to Houston. Not at the buzzer, but pretty close. James Harden hit a shot that he clearly used his arm to kind of brush off. That's putting it lightly. He pushed off, but, you know, it was a clever push off because he was right in a spin and maybe you couldn't see it. Anyway, Harden went off last night, 35, 8 points, 9 assists to get it done. The Rockets got a good start, and they looked pretty good. They looked pretty good for a while. They were up at half, up in the third, and then you could see somewhere in the third period, I'd say maybe 6-minute mark, something like that, Golden State started to chop down the tree a little bit, you know, started to get back into it, and they pushed it all the way into the fourth quarter. I want to say maybe with like 7-6 minutes left, something like that, where they actually got the lead. They got the lead, and then they got the lead late, like real late, and it looked like, huh, this might happen here. But, like I said, Harden, they got a bucket with like, I don't know, 8 seconds left, 10 seconds left. Harden dribbles the floor, goes down on Iguodala, has a nice little spin move to free himself up to go along with the push on the shoulder, which is a crafty veteran move if the refs don't see it. The ref behind him is definitely not going to see it. And, you know, it is what it is, right? That's what it comes down to. But Harden hits the shot with about 2 seconds left. And the Rockets win a game. Now, obviously, they win a game without Steph Curry. That's two in a row that they've played Golden State without Steph Curry. And last night, you know, you can look at some of the numbers for Golden State and you go, that was pretty impressive. Then others, you're like, huh, you know, Draymond Green really didn't score much. You know, he only took two shots. Got to the line six times. He was 3 of 6, which isn't great. But, you know, if he's 4 of 6 or 5 of 6, it's not that big of a deal. But he didn't really score, but he did get 7 rebounds, 7 assists. But he had 7 turnovers. And so he was basically playing their point guard position, which he kind of does already. And that's too many turnovers for that, obviously. Overall, they had 23 on the game. And that's not going to get it done, obviously. And it was 23-16. That was the difference there. They also got out-rebounded. They only shot the ball 43% for them. That's not good. But it's not like the Warriors shot it better. They actually shot it for a lower percentage, 39%. The big telling thing of the game, obviously no Curry. You know, that stands out, right? But really, the three-point line, 6 of 25 were the Golden State Warriors. So, Klay Thompson was 0 of 7 from 3. So, that's not a good look. Obviously, Klay, you know, needs to be able to be the guy that steps up. He did have 17, 8, and 2 steals last night. But, like I said, 0 of 7 is not going to get it. And you know how the game turned out. If he hits just one of them, well, I guess you could say they win, right? Because the score was 97-96. But, you know, you could make an argument that the team at this point to actually – they haven't faced adversity. They started facing – and I'm talking about Golden State here. They started facing some adversity – or I shouldn't say adversity. I should say pressure. By the way, Spieth, I think it's Marcus Spieth, something like that. He had 22 points off the bench. And same with Clark. Clark's a guy that, you know, doesn't really get a bunch of playing time. And he played good. He played good. But back to the point I was making, you know, they never really faced adversity. They did face some pressure. Golden State did near the end of the year to win those games to get to 73. That's some pressure, right? But it's not the same, you know? It's not the same. So maybe this adversity with Steph Curry going out with this ankle injury, maybe it'll help him in the long run. Obviously, the series is 2-1 now, so they're still in control. If they have to play another game without Curry, though, it's conceivable to see them win, you know, losing that game on the road. That wouldn't be the craziest thing, because the Warriors, you know, they didn't shoot well. I just kind of went over. Klay Thompson's not going to go 0-7, you know, back-to-back probably. But Houston can shoot better too, right? So it'll be interesting to see. I'm going to kind of hold off on that subject matter a little bit and wait for Marshall to come in because, you know, obviously that's his squad. But I don't know. Let's say this. With the ankle, you know, they did an MIR on it and nothing came up. But the fact that they did an MIR on it tells you that he hurt it at least, right? And you're not going to sit him out for no reason. I could see if he's going to be okay, my guess is he'll play in this next game. I don't think they play till Sunday, so they do have that extra day off. But if it's still kind of lingering, you know, they're going to wait till it's 100%. But the fact that it's taken this long tells me it was at least a serious ankle sprain. You know, the way they played without him when he did leave the game, because he got hurt, came back just for a little bit, and then got him out of there, right? I think that's how it went. So, in the first game. Then they won game two, you know, pretty handily. So they thought, well, shoot, why not be careful here and leave him out for three? If that's the case, then I think he'd play game four, no doubt about it, because then they'd need to get that, and they can sweep at home. Or not sweep, but, you know, finish it off at home. But if he doesn't play Sunday, that may lead us to believe that, you know, it's a pretty serious ankle injury. Because then all of a sudden it's 2-2. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see exactly how that works out. And with ankles, you know, is it going to be 100% healed? They're going to be careful, of course. But if he sits another game, they lose. It's 2-2 in a home game. You know, it's kind of weird because, like, how careful can you be? You're still trying to advance at that point. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how that works. My guess is he'll play Sunday. That's just a complete guess, though. But even if he does play and they win and then they close that out at home, ankles can be a problem, as we know. They can stay tender. Just a quick little roll can go right back to the pain that you just had. So we'll see. We'll see where that, you know, leads us. I'm sure he's done some reading on it, Marshall, and learning more about it. So we'll see how that works. Anyway, last night Oklahoma City pretty much put it on the Dallas Mavericks, 131-102. Ibaka had a nice game. Cantor had a really nice game out the bench, 21-8. Westbrook, 26 points, 15 assists. The guy, he did have 6 turnovers, but at least he got 15 assists to make up for it. 34 points for Durant, who had a struggling, you know, he really didn't shoot the ball awesome still, but, you know, it was really from three that he's a little off right now. But coming off, you know, the worst, what was it, the most shots missed in the playoffs? I think it was 25 or something like that. I can't remember. But anyway, Durant bounced back and so did the Thunder. But, you know, the fact that they give up so many late leads this whole year and have done it, you know, first game in the play or second game of playoffs or whatever, it just makes you still question the Thunder, you know? You want to think, man, I mean, they got a nice squad, you know? They had a pretty good season, but still, there's just things that linger with them, you know, that keep you thinking, saying, huh, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure if they're back. And I don't even mean back from a couple years ago, like, you know, even more than a couple of years ago when they're in the finals and all that. Nothing like that, but you just can't trust the team. And speaking of can't trust the team, Toronto. Now, I know, you know, Toronto, considering, if you look at the first round, or I should say, well, the first round we knew there wasn't an incredible amount of games. The last couple of years we've been a little spoiled in the first round compared to normal NBA playoffs, where you have a good series or two. And that's kind of what it looks like this year will be. Obviously, the next tonight and tomorrow and the next day really will have a big, you know, bearing on where this thing's going to go and if we get some more, you know, if we do get some extended series. But I don't know. It's kind of funny. It's kind of funny how that works, but my point is with Toronto, you know, all these, you know, there was a lot of blowouts in that first round. I think it was the biggest point differential in the first game of the opening round, except for that Toronto game. Now they've since, you know, they won game two, and now they won, you know, on the road, looked really good actually, and got the job done. But Toronto still hasn't gotten past the first round in the last couple of years, so it just kind of makes me think, you know. Sure, I think they can get past round one, maybe round two, but in the end, if at this point they're not focused enough to win game one in the series, are they for real? I mean, a lot of people, Toronto, they got a pretty decent chance here to beat the Cavs. Because, you know, the Cavs, they've been inconsistent as well. But we know push comes to shove, game seven, or not even game seven, but just a seven-game series, you know, they at least have some experience from last year, although two of their, you know, some of their scorers, you know, necessarily didn't play all last year together or whatever, playoffs-wise. But I don't know. What you look at Toronto and you say, man, they got some pieces to do stuff, no doubt about it, and they look like they're that team that will challenge Cleveland. So it's not just, hey, Cleveland's got it. Hopefully we get some good series. You know what I mean? I don't know. Be interesting to see. And I see Marshall on here, so I'll go to him in just a short little bit. If you look at from Wednesday's action, the Heat are up now. 2-0. They took care of the Hornets. They took care of their two home games there. Cleveland keeping it moving as well on Wednesday, and same with the Clippers. So like I said, this weekend will have a lot to do as far as what we're actually going to get out of these playoff series. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Come Monday, we'll really know if we're already kind of looking towards a second-round matchup with just one or two series lingering, or if, in fact, we get a little bit more action than we thought. Now, the Spurs-Grizzlies, you can't really expect much there, you know? I mean, the Grizzlies are just banged up. So what are you going to do? The Hawks and Celtics, I kind of felt like was going to be a really good series. Clearly, the Celtics need to win tonight. Clearly. You know, they're down 2-0. They need a win. In fact, when you look at it, like I said, the Spurs and Grizzlies, I'm not really even... We're not going to cover that too much because of, you know, there's nothing wrong with Memphis. They've been a solid team the last, what, three, 4 years. But probably even a little more. But, you know, they're just beat up. So that we really can't comment too much about that series or even rip it. But tonight, the Hawks and Celtics and Cavs and Pistons, if the Pistons really want to do something here, they got to win. And same, like I said, Celtics, they're at home. They got to win this game. They just have to. And I think they will. I think they actually will. I'm really looking forward to see on Saturday how the Pacers bounce back at home and see if they can get this to a 2-2 series. That's what I'm really looking forward to, because the Pacers, you know, after stealing a game on the road, to come out flat and just nothing much to them, they got pretty much handled in that game. That was a little surprising. Definitely a full slate of games, on Saturday. Four of them and four on Sunday, I believe, or at least three. But the Raptors will start things off at the Pacers. Like I said, that's a big, big, crucial game in that series. The Hornets still trying to get off the schneid. They need to win game three to really have any, you know, hope in this one, in my opinion. When you get up 2-0, and that other team, the home team now, only needs to win one of these road games, and they can maybe possibly end the series with the home game, it puts on a lot of pressure, obviously. So you know you got to steal. Thunders and Mavericks, Ken Dallas show up in that game Saturday night. We'll see. And then the Clippers and Blazers, I don't know. I mean, I can't, it's kind of one of those things where I'm like, well, I the Blazers, just the fact that they're there where they're at, you know, it's not, I can't really, I don't know. So I really think that Boston's going to get it done and hopefully make that an interesting series. And we'll see what Dallas can do. We'll see what Dallas can do. I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host, Marshall. What's going on, Marshall? How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good, bud. Just got off work, so happy to talk some hoops. You know, it is crazy how, as you mentioned, there's a lot of these series that are, you know, pretty much, you know, should be over in a way, or it would be a massive upset. Yet you have hockey playoffs, which is just as long of a season, and it's literally a crapshoot whether you're a one or an eight seed. So it's crazy how the formula playoffs are the same, but in hockey, it's like every year an eight seed can be the one. It's nothing crazy. You know, if Houston were to come back and beat Golden State, I guess it's pretty out. But, you know, it's crazy how, like you said, you can pretty much kind of fast forward it. Like, maybe Detroit can beat LeBron for one game because, you know, Stanley Johnson's in his head. But, you know, it's weird how we do have stuff to talk about. As you mentioned, I heard you're bringing down some games. But, yeah, it's like, okay, like, something would really have to go crazy for this to occur. So I'm happy we're watching the Blast. We've had some good games, obviously. We've also had some massive blowouts. But this is kind of like an appetizer round, Chris. I guess we're waiting to see if something crazy happens, praying to avoid injuries, and kind of looking more forward to what second-round matches will entail, which should help, you know, help us avoid having every single analyst pick, you know, one team out of, like, have all 20 analysts pick all the same 20 teams, like a majority of that happened in the first round.
And, you know, I mean, I don't know if I'd say crazy because it's two different sports, you know what I mean? In hockey, you have production from three full lines, you know what I mean? And there's so many more players that can make a difference in a hockey game than they can in a basketball game. You know what I mean? You have five guys on the court that are going to play pretty much the majority of the minutes. Totally different sport. It's not like, and then you have a goaltender. You know, it's not like you get a hot goaltender and whew, it's a different ball game.
Yeah.
You know, you can have all the things you want, but you got to get it in that goal. You know what I mean? So, total different sport, and that's just the way it is almost every year. Now, the last 2 years, we did get a little throwback stuff where some of the opening games were, or opening series were good, and we had some game sixes and game sevens. I think we had three, and obviously we had that Spurs-Clippers that came all the way down to the wire. So it just kind of feels like the last, I don't know, decade or so, maybe a little more, that, you know, this has kind of been the formula. And money-wise, you know, it is what it is, but that's kind of why I liked the five-game series in the first round instead of the seven.
Yeah, I agree.
But with that said, I was on board as a Timberwolves fan because it gave us a chance to pull up another upset in a game to try to extend it. So I was happy that time when they changed it, you know, at the time they changed it 15 years ago or whatever, maybe even, I don't remember the exact year they changed it, but
sure.
So I get it because it's potential for more games. Well, it makes it more games right off the bat because you have to get four rather than three. But, you know, it is what it is, and that's part of the NBA. You know, this is kind of, if you're a sports fan, this is kind of, like you said, when you're paying attention to some of these games, if they come down close, or, you know, you are kind of, you know, jumping in on the hockey stuff too, because, and, you know, it's a little different, but baseball, if you have two or three pitchers that are just killing it, it can really quiet up everything and make games that, usually, you're going against a high-scoring offense. You can make 3-2 games pretty quick before you know it, too. So it's kind of a different sport. So that's kind of what we have year in and year out, especially when you don't have as much depth. But, you know, that part doesn't surprise me at all. But I don't know. You know, I got a couple of questions for you right off the bat.
Sure.
You look at a team like Toronto. And the last 2 years, they've been knocking on the door of being a pretty damn good team, right?
Yeah.
Now, last year, if I'm not mistaken, they ran into Paul Pierce, you know? So, that, I mean, that can happen.
Yeah.
That can happen. That can happen. 2 years ago, I don't think they were really expect. They were kind of in between expectations on that, in my opinion. But this year, for a good chunk of the year, a lot of people said, hey, you know, this squad, you know, I think that they finally kind of got it together, you know. Those experience in the playoffs have helped them. And we see the largest point differential in the first game of all these series. It was the largest point differential, right? So that tells you not much going on. However, Toronto loses. And you're like, wait a second, what the hell is going on? Now, they've since, you know, gotten back and gotten the lead now. And now this is a very important game for them coming up. But is that kind of just a like kind of a yellow flag at this point? Like, man, if you're not tuned in as a second seed to not, you know, if you really have had any aspirations of challenging in a 7-game series, Cleveland, and it's not like they're a great team right now, but they're still, you know, a good enough team to do it, even with all their issues this year and resting and injury, and we know their coach stuff. I mean, what's up with Toronto? You know, right when you want to believe Toronto, you want to believe them, then they do that, and you're like, yeah, I know they've bounced back now. It's 2-1, but still, I just feel like, to me, it's a little bit of a yellow flag, Marshall. What do you think about that?
I think that guard-wise, I would say that they're about as gifted as anyone, Chris. I mean, it's not Curry and Clay dropping threes back there, but, you know, Lowry had the whole issue of losing weight, and he said that he felt a lot healthier during the season. And DeMar DeRozan, I mean, if you need a guy that can just score, he's one of the better ones in the league. So I think backcourt-wise, they're really good, Chris. And I think where the problem comes, and from what I've kind of either read this year, discussed with friends, or seen, is all of their really gifted offensive bigs can score, but they don't play D. And all of their extremely talented defensive bigs can't score. So you literally have a mix-and-match problem of, you know, do we play Vela Sunic or Vela, the Vela dude, who's a stud offensive player that sucks at D, and you leave him out there with Scola. And those guys can both score, but they suck at defense. So do you bring in Patterson and Biombo, who aren't going to score as much? So it seems like kind of the common theme for me is, A, you know, getting over the mental cliff, or hill, I should say, as you mentioned earlier. Like, can they finally get past the first round? And then how do they mix and match their people? Because, you know, if you want to go neck and neck and try and score, that works. But if you're playing Cleveland, you're going to have kind of a defensive mindset, especially if, you know, if you see the theory of LeBron and Love out there, or maybe you do try and run up and down with them. So I think it's just a variation, Chris, of Dwayne Casey, who's done a hell of a job up there picking and matching the right people to where they won't have a big issue. Because Lowry's going to get his. I don't see, you know, a lot of issues with Lowry and DeRozan getting points. But I think the front court is truly the question mark. And I'll admit I watch a lot of West Coast NBA, as I've always talked about Warriors and Kings and Blazers. And my Toronto Raptor knowledge is very limited. But I think you're just trying to find the perfect roster. And with the NBA, as it's become more sabermetrics, Chris, I think that the analytics and stats really go to show you who is your best matchup. You know, Valasunic is incredible offensively, but he's a massive problem on defense. So, and I think since those numbers have been broken down, I think all year Dwayne Casey's been trying to find that matchup, and I still think that he's going to try and pinpoint it back and forth. So maybe it's fair to say that how he handles his sudden could really determine how they do in the playoffs against better teams.
I think that about sums it up, and that kind of sums up. We've had some talks in the last couple of shows about that, as far as that kind of sums up the NBA at times. You know, the mix and match,
yeah.
You're always looking for matchups, but the fact that, you know, I think you hit it on the head as far as can they really tighten those reins, although like you said, they do have a tall dude that can block some shots, and every once in a while he brings out the Mutombo finger like he did, you know, a couple games back. But yeah, it's interesting. I don't know about, like, amazing on offense with who you're talking about, but yeah, you're right. He's much better on offense, and he can rebound as well, but or has been at least of late. But yeah, I don't know, because they just they look the part, you know, and then all of a sudden you go, what the hell are you doing game one? Like, you can't even be focused enough to win game one, even if it is, you know, in overtime. You don't go and lose game one if you really, you know, feel good about yourself. And I also think it is that mental block. I think that was a great point that you brought up as well, that mental block that just, can we do this? I guess the confidence of having Drake on your sidelines is not good enough. You know what I mean? You need more than just Drake. You know? I don't know what it is. But,
And Chris, I think a very nice parallel for kind of the same situation that applies to Toronto is also in Oklahoma City, to switch conferences, is what are you doing losing game two to a well-coached, veteran-laden team in Dallas? But realistically, you know, all year, basically, any guy I talked to basketball with kept telling me, you know, look out for the Thunder come playoff time. And I guess it could be considered arrogant or cocky or just nonchalant, but I said, they don't scare me if they play the Warriors. And all year I hear people say, well, Westbrook and Durant and all this. And I just don't see them having the capability to beat the Warriors or Spurs in a seven-game series, because they have those mental lapses like they do. And Billy Donovan's really hurt their defense. So to kind of mention Toronto, Dwayne Casey's job might be on the line. I think you have way more on the line for Oklahoma City franchise than as a fan. If I was an Oklahoma City Thunder fan, Chris, I would be praying to God every game because this might be the last year we have our crew together. I mean, you're not going to lose your team, but if Durant and Westbrook leave town, you're not rebuilding anytime soon. So I think you really need to buckle down. I thought that Zach Lowe, the ESPN NBA writer, was like, dude, on the podcast this week, he's like, what are they doing losing to Dallas if they want all these high-class accolades? Like, if you got Durant and Westbrook, you got to come out and just say, hey, Dallas, you can't play with us. They need to come out and take care of them in games four and five and build up some type of strength. And I don't know. I think that Toronto is the exact same issue in Oklahoma City of sometimes they're great, but defensively they have issues. And when it comes down to the end of the game, is it just give the ball to Westbrook or Durant, or how do they split out? I think they're also kind of a wonder wealth of talent, Chris, but also a lot of issues of do we really trust this team to win after round one? What's your take on the Thunder? Do you think the comparison to Toronto Sarah, where you got pieces, but they never seem quite to mesh, or do you think they could make a serious attempt at the Spurs and Warriors? Because I don't think they can.
Well, making a serious attempt at the Spurs and Warriors is different than making a serious attempt at Cleveland in the East. So, like right now, you could make an argument, had they been in the East, they'd be the number one seed. You know what I mean?
That's fair.
I'm not really going to go too much further. Plus, they have, their core has gone past the first round and second round got to the finals. So, I can't really talk about Toronto and them in the same breath. But as far as, I think it's total, I mean, we've seen this a lot. I mean, last year we can't really go too deep on it because, you know, injuries clearly were an issue. And it really, if you look at it, the way they closed last year, it was a small sample, but it looked like, wow, Westbrook changed his game around and he's become more all-purpose. I don't know if you remember, but I remember you even saying, you know what, though, if they get in the playoffs, they're dangerous, but they didn't qualify for the playoffs because they, you know, they had so much injury. Durant missed so much time.
Yeah.
And they seemed a lot more glued at the end of last year than this year, and that's weird because they did have a pretty good season this year, but I think what stands out, and like you said, it's still similar as far as a yellow flag, even though we kind of knew this going into it, but the letdowns in the fourth quarter, you know?
Yeah, a lot of them.
The leads, You know, it's one thing not to be able to close a game, like you said, with isolation and not get the right shots and just kind of be a bland offense that's a lot easier to stop in the let a 10-plus point game go. And that's something they did. I believe they led the NBA. I don't remember the number, if it was 10 or 13. I don't remember how many there were. But I believe they led the NBA in fourth quarter, you know, like letdown. So that's where the, you know, that's a red flag, not even a yellow flag. So definitely they're just not trustworthy. You know, they're not trustworthy at this time. But that said, you know, as far as matchups wise and all that, yeah, I don't know. Coming into this, it doesn't. I guess I'm not shocked or surprised or wondering, just because I think it's pretty much played out this way. And although you make great comments as an Oklahoma City fan, you know, I'd have those feelings. But just because you have those feelings, it doesn't. You can't all of a sudden create a better team out of no. You know what I mean? So
very true. Yeah.
I don't know. I think they're just kind of who they are, and they haven't had a great offensive mind there per se to give, like, I don't know. I don't know. The it seems like they. I liked what they did as far as kind of retooling their team in the last 2 years. And obviously they needed to do it, clearly, you know. But, like, you can't have Perkins starting and stuff like that, you know. I understand all that, you know. But, and, you know, Cantor off the bench is good. And they do have – you look at them, you go, huh, man, if they get hot – and I really think that's what it is, Marshall. They would just have to get in the zone so much – that it all kind of turns up, because they don't play consistent, solid, great, you know, high-octane defense the whole time. So maybe, like, you know, plenty of players do, when they're on, and that's really the only way I can see them, you know, winning this thing is if that was the case. Or even, you know, not winning the whole thing, but actually advancing, you know, in the next round. And you know, do they match up better with Golden State or the Spurs? I mean, I guess the only thing is, and this kind of leads me into, you know, I briefed upon it at the beginning of the show, but I kind of wanted your take a little bit more, because I know you've probably done more thought in research, at least a little bit, on Curry in Golden State. So yeah, I'm not really surprised, but yeah, it's a red flag, because, you know, Dallas is just, like we talked about last week, it just, they got some talent, but it just kind of there. It's all there to have a season that'll get you in the playoffs. And you know, that type of thing, but it really doesn't mean much overall as far as a competing team. And I didn't think any of these bottom five really did, you know, heading into this thing, and I now don't either. I think the only people that get a pass, though, is Portland, because they're so fresh, you know, their whole thing, that the fact that they turned it around like that, or not turned it around, but were able to still get to the fifth spot, I just think that's impressive. But then also, the Grizzlies are just, you know, I mean, we can't really scold them too much, because they don't, I mean, if you look at their starting lineup, it's a joke, you know what I mean? You're like, okay, yeah, there's no way they can win that. They're kind of, their hands are tied behind their back, basically. And, you know, using your feet is a foul. It's a penalty in basketball, so you're screwed right there. But if you see the matchup where Curry would be lingering, well, then that would be a little bit more. That'd be like a wounded animal, and all of a sudden a prey comes up and goes, well, I'm going to take advantage of this. And they got hot, and then the combination, I could see that. You know, I could still see that.
Sure.
Because they are capable of exploding. Those two are very hard to contain in Westbrook, really, these last 2 years, his all-purpose game is through the roof. I would have never guessed that it would have been this complete. I would have never guessed that. You know, if you told me 4 years ago, would he have been a triple-double machine? I'd have been like, no way. Or he would continue to take that, you know, he used to take a bunch of bad shots, and that's just not the case. which leads us into Golden State, though. Where are you at? You know, I'll just tell you my take on it, and then I want your take.
Sure.
So, game one, you know, has the ankle. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. He came back for just a second, and then they pulled him for the rest of the game, right?
Yeah, I believe so. I was literally just getting off work, and I sat down. I remember texting my friend during the game. I was like, is Curry hurt? And he had thought that they just pulled him because they were up by so big in the fourth quarter. But something didn't quite seem right because I thought for a while when I looked at the bench, he was not on it. So obviously there's
right.
a difference of sitting on the bench, maintaining a big lead or being in the back. So I believe you're right. I think he might have tweaked it, came back a little bit. And then for the second half of the court game, he was either on ice or back in the locker room getting help or medically. And, yeah, so I
right.
believe that assessment is correct, Chris.
And then game two, they played so well and took care of business that I felt like no matter what is really going on with the ankle, whether it's just a mild sprain, whether there's something more to it, whatever it is, right?
Sure.
I felt like the confidence that they had seeing what happened in game one without him, and especially game two, the way they handled business, I felt like, well, they're, you know, I can see why they're not going to play him game three, because they just saw a game where they looked so good without him against that team who really is, at times, you're just like, man, I can't believe this team is this. I don't know. They just, Houston is just not, they don't inspire you to watch them. You know what I mean? It's just like, what's that?
I think the word for them, in my opinion, is dysfunctional.
Yeah. It just, you see them and you're like, I don't know what's up with this. Sure, Harden's fun when he goes off, but it is. It's such a weird thing to have that kind of talent. And even of last year, you know, to get to the conference final and then to come back this year and have that, that's neither here or there, to be a 500 team and all that, you know, whatever. But now, obviously, last night, we could talk a little bit about that game. But game four, here's my thing. It's Sunday, right?
Yeah.
If he doesn't, I think we'll know just how serious he's hurt if he doesn't play. If he doesn't play Sunday, then I think that there's some serious stuff going on with his ankle, to an extent anyway. When I say serious, you know, I like to preference that. I'm not saying, I know they did the MRA and nothing came up, but the fact that they did the MRA tells me he full on twisted it, clearly. You know what I mean? It wasn't like a tweak and then they said, oh, it'll be fine. You know, just a little tweak. It definitely
sure.
wasn't just a tweak, because they wouldn't have keep hold them out. You know, they wouldn't have ran an MRI if he just said, no, I'm good, I'm okay. You know, on second thought with his ankles, though, they probably would have just, like, great step, we're doing it anyway. But, you know, I think this game here will tell us a lot about where his ankle's at. So if you want to talk a little bit about last night's game, and then if you want to, maybe I'm assuming you've, you know, at least, you know, done a little digging to see if in fact you can get any information on what people are saying or how he looked in a warm up or whatever.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I guess I try. I mean, I follow their main beat writer on Twitter. You know, you watch SportsCenter. I mean, I try to steer away from message boards because God knows who's actually posting, you know, God knows what. God, I said God too much. This turned into a religious podcast. I try to find factual information, Chris, but it is so hard to, you know, to find true facts because, in my opinion, as a Golden State fan, from what I'd heard and what Steph Curry had said on game three, I thought he was going to go because prior to game three, he had the mindset of, it's feeling pretty good. I'm going to give it a shot. And like an hour before tip-off, they ruled him out. So I think from that perspective, I think it's a good sign, because that told me that he went through game time warm-up play or preparation, and at the last second said, okay, I'm not going. That tells me he's close, because I believe I read a quote of his saying that I can do almost everything I want to at full speed, but there's a few things I'm still missing. I guess as a Warriors fan, I'm going to take that as an optimistic thing, saying, you know, maybe there's another day or rest if needed, and then you can sprint off like you need to. You can shoot the jumper like you need to. So from an optimistic perspective, I'm feeling that he's damn near close. Again, I'm not friends with him. I don't know him. The Warriors aren't going to keep tweeting out everything, but I'm thinking he's near it. So I would assume he's back for game four, but if you do need a little still mindset of, all right, we still need to rest him a little bit. Okay, let's say they rest him, they lose game four. But in the back of Kerr's mind, he knows Steph is ready to go game five. Then you got a best of three, and you have two games at home. I'm not treading water at that point. I'm a little nervous, but it's like, okay, maybe Steph isn't ready quite for game four. Let's give it our best shot, try and sneak one out. And if we lose game four, then we got Steph for five, six, and seven. Let's go. I'm feeling confident we can win this. The mindset I have of when we play without Curry is it's really like street ball last night. And it's super fun to watch, but you're also kind of giving into how the Rockets play. I think that the Warriors have matured a ton in running a half-court offense and they're passing this. They're probably the best passing team in the NBA besides the Spurs. I guess you could argue back and forth. But I feel that watching them play last night, the majority of the game, it's just run and gun. And I think that favors the Rockets because it kind of deteriorates our very nice played sets. It's like, you know, you see Harden and Beasley and Dwight Howard and all these Houston guys run up and down the court, and you have back-to-back turnovers and crazy passes. It's almost a chaotic mindset. I feel that we do that a lot when Curry's not in the game, because when Curry's in the game, he makes the offensive possessions flow so much better. Now, I still think that Sean Livingston's a potential, my number one X factor for us to win the title. I think that guy did a remarkable job. I can't believe he missed that short little layup at the end of last night, which he almost never, ever does. But to wrap up this kind of Golden State theory of mine, it's just when Curry's out of the game, I think everyone just loves to run, and it scares me a little bit because you do get a little more turnover prone, and you don't quite run the offense as well as Steph and Klay running off picks and feeding off each other and really developing a nice offensive flow. So that's my one concern. I still think we could beat Houston without him, but just the way we change our style of ball scares me a little bit as a fan, Chris.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess my thing is, if he doesn't play game four, I would still put up a yellow flag for his health, because what you just said makes a lot of sense as far as, well, I know I got him game five. Who cares if we go back 2-2? It's best 2 out of 3. Well, in the first round, best 2 out of 3, 7 games, that's
it's taxing.
That's taxing, exactly. And
you're right.
The longer he stays out, the more it tells you he was hurt. Because I don't know if Kerr would put himself in a 4-4 if he has a healthy – if he says, you know what, let's just go one more day, one more game – I shouldn't say day, one more game, and then we'll bring him back. Even if it's 4-4, who cares? I don't think coaches really think like that. I think that if he has him, he'll play him. And the fact that if he doesn't play Sunday, I think that's a yellow flag. And not just that, but we know how ankles linger. And it doesn't take a full-on tweak.
No.
Or a full-on roll, I should say. It doesn't take a full-on roll. It only takes a tweak to go right back to where you just were, or even halfway there, which is not playing. So that's why I really think game four – will tell us about his injury. Because like you said, they can talk, they can say this, they can say that. If he says I'm ready to give it a go, but he wasn't full strength, that tells me Kerr, they wanted him. But, that's interesting. I really think, though, game four is going to tell us a lot. If he doesn't play in that, then I'm like, okay. I mean, anything can happen, when you get into a two games and three nights. I think they could do it too, but I don't know, man. I'm wondering. I'm really wondering. And you can't help but to think, will an injury like this linger through the playoffs and spark back up, That's a big question mark, I'd say, for the rest of these playoffs.
Yeah, he'd been so good too for such a long time. I mean, I don't think this is super serious, but at least I hope not. But he did have massive ankle problems. If you go back 4 or 5 years ago, every time he rolled it, every fan kind of held their breath. It's like, oh man, Steph rolled his ankle again. He had kind of glass ankles, you could say, and it seems like that problem's been solved, but it's not to say his ankles aren't back to being strong, but I mean, I could roll my ankle at work tonight. Like whether you have a glass ankle or not, if you get rolled, it's going to hurt. The injury prone part of it, I don't know if that's bad luck or whatever, but it did seem to be a problem they had to avoid for a long time. So I don't know. I think that Houston is still beatable. I mean, God, if Draymond Green doesn't bounce the ball off his leg, he might hit a jumper. Sean Livingston misses that bunny, which he almost never does. I don't think that we're going to get ran out the gym. But also, game four, Houston, you're giving them a little life. Harden can do his thing, and he freaking always finds a way to get to the foul line. At that stadium,
they shot 39% last night too. So it's not like Houston had their full game together either. You know what I mean? They can shoot better from the field.
And the part that got me, Chris, I thought you nailed it when you started off the summary by discussing them, is dysfunctional family. Because when you saw the vine or the reaction to the bench when Harden hit that little turnaround fade to go up, which was essentially the game-winning shot, with just under 3 seconds, you see Clint Capella wave his towel and snap it down, huge celebration, and everyone on the bench is going nuts. Dwight Howard looked like he was at a funeral. He did not seem happy whatsoever that, Harden, the guys who have been arguing all year, scored. I mean, I know they're not buddies, but, dude, your team just hit a huge shot. You're back in the series. You should be clapping. Harden's face didn't go. It was a somber note the whole time, and the rest of the bench is going nuts. So, it's definitely not the most fluid group of guys that are playing together compared to a Golden State or a San Antonio, which they formed a bond. And, who knows how they truly are off the court, but at least on the court, they seem to play for each other. So I don't want to lose to a team like that. But without our leader, that does get a little more difficult. So, I'm with you. If he's out game four, I'll be like, okay, well, let's try and snag this one and then put the dagger in the throat game five and then get a little resting. Because as we've kind of talked about over the years that we've always done this show, you get extra days in the NBA. It's not exactly always every other day you're playing. In theory, it could be. You get gaps off. So having time to rest is huge. Maybe Curry, if we were to win 4 and 5, then we get a couple of days off. And maybe, the Blazers and Clippers go to game 7, and that kind of bumps things back. So, as you mentioned, getting it done early would help, and obviously rest and preparation would do them a favor. I think we've summed that up pretty well, and I'm going to give you something that's probably going to surprise you, Chris. And I think in the West, I believe one series does go to 7, and I honestly think that the Clippers and Blazers do go to 7, because I don't think that the Blazers lose on their home court. If for big home court wins, they smoked Cleveland this year by 30, and they smoked the Warriors, and they had a very nice year. I'm not saying that they're going to go and beat the Clippers by 35, but I truly believe that this game is going to come back to L.A. and this series tied at 5. I think from watching the first two games, the Clippers did pull away late, but in game 2 especially, the Blazers missed a lot of open threes. I think with their home cooking, I think this goes seven, and I would favor the Clippers in that scenario due to home court. But I don't think the Blazers lose, and I think this goes to seven. Do you believe that the Blazers have a chance, or would you think this one ends before seven? Because I don't think the Blazers lose at home. I think their home court is what they need, a little magic potion that helps you hit a couple more open threes.
Well, so you're saying, okay, so they're going to win. I don't think they'll win all three at home, no. I don't think they'll win all three at home. I don't think it goes seven. But that's not to say they can't win one of these, or if they win two in a row and then lose game six and lose, you know, I'm not sure. But as far as I think they'll hit a couple more threes, well, in the first two games, they've needed more than just a couple more threes. You know what I mean? It was 115 to 95 and 102 to 81. So they've needed more than just a couple threes. You know what I mean?
The fourth quarters have been bad for them. I agree.
Right. So, no, I don't think that'll go seven, but I'm not saying sweep either. You know, I think Chris Paul's been playing great in these postseasons, which really doesn't surprise me right now in the first, you know, two full games there. He's been playing great. And Blake Griffith, you know, we talked about him kind of in the preview. Where is he going to be at? You know, what exact is he, like he said, he was still playing a little hurt. How much time, you know, it'd be different if you knew that they were just setting up to go to the conference final and they could play with him at, you know, a little hurt. And then, you know, in a month from now, then all of a sudden you feel better and you're good to go, you know. So first game, I thought he looked pretty good. Second game, not as much, but he didn't look bad either, you know. So, and he hasn't played big minutes just yet. You know, he hasn't played, I don't even think he's played 35 minutes just far, and that has something to do, or thus far, I should say, and that has something to do with it. But I don't think it'll go seven, but I could see them winning. I wouldn't be shocked if they went 2-2, and then, you know, they, but I think the Clippers will find a way to win one game on the road. I really do. I don't think it'll go seven. What do you think about, I mean, the Celtics need it tonight if they're going to do anything. What do you think about that? Do you think they, you know, I feel like they're going to bounce back and get it done tonight at home and then make that a more interesting series. Because I really felt like that was going to be an interesting series. And that's not to say, just because you didn't, you know, you have confidence in Portland and they didn't win, you know, either of the first two games either, you know. So, I don't know. I just think that Boston's going to make that a better series than sometimes you get the 2-0 kind of. What the 2-0 does, it obviously makes such a clear advantage into winning the series, but it's not a death sentence to say it won't be a 6-7 game series.
You know, I think, and I'll be honest, part of it's my bias. I've enjoyed watching Portland. I truly like the team they'd had for the last couple of years. So, I mean, I'd like to say this is stat speaking, but it's more of my heart. But yeah, I believe that 2-0 is not a detrimental. Obviously, 3-0, way different ballgame. I think, Chris, that Boston's still a little ways away. I think that you got to give a boatload of respect to what Stevens has done. But and we compliment him because they have a bunch of guys he rotates. I think you run into a little bit of an issue of can you take a rotational, well-rounded team into the playoffs and be successful? I think that in a couple of years, this could be developed into a better squad. But, you know, if you ask a random guy on the street or an ESPN person or whoever, who's the best player in the Celtics? Well, is it Jay Crowder? Like, is Smart their best defender? Like, is IT taking the shots when it matters? Like, I think you have a lot of good regular season pieces, but I think to be taken as a serious playoff team and to try and get themselves back into the series, I think they're still a little bit of ways away. I think that you got to give, a tremendous amount of respect to Brad Stevens for forming this team the way he has this year to have the success they did, but I don't think that necessarily formulates a playoff success. Compared to Atlanta, who last year – I picked them to go seven against the Cavs and possibly win the damn East. And they have pretty much the same team back. A minor difference here or there, but basically the same squad. So I think you have a well-tested playoff team who, in the sneaky back of their minds, like, guys, we still have the pieces we had last year. Let's try and get this together. So I think you have a teams in two different mindsets. Stevens is probably learning a bunch about his squad and is doing a marvelous job. I think he's also running into a coach who's just as good, probably has a better system set for the playoffs, and has better pieces. So I would actually pick Atlanta to win. I just think you have too much going against you for Boston. In a couple of years, that could change. But also, losing Avery Bradley, who I believe is in play.
Yeah.
A lot of people said that's a huge detrimental loss to the team, especially from a defensive perspective and a three-point shooting perspective. So,
I'm saying game three. Like, I think you broke that down well, but I'm saying game three, do you think that they can make this an a series that thought, okay, well, maybe they could stretch it to game six or something like that. Not necessarily win it.
Sure. I honestly, I don't think they do. I think they lose tonight. I will take Atlanta in five. I think that Atlanta wins game three, and I think they win five. Just too many little pieces that Boston has without enough big pieces. You formed a great foundation, but now you do need a Kevin Durant or a John Wall. You need just a hypothetically an NBA all-star that can come in and say, okay, guys, how about you jump on my back? You have a lot of nice pieces, but you need me to be your leader. Boom, I'm your guy. And without having that I'm your guy person, I think Atlanta's in the mindset of, okay, guys, no one gives a crap about us anymore. It's all about Cleveland and Toronto. We can still cause issues, so let's go and play that way. So, yeah, I'm seeing Atlanta in five, and I think that this series isn't much. But if there is a coach to do it, I mean, Stevens is, and I think Boston won like 15 games at home in a row this year, which is a streak they haven't set since like the 80s or 70s when they're in their glory days. So I shouldn't get too confident saying Stevens can't drop a win at home, but I would bet on Atlanta tonight, Chris.
So are there any other, can Charlotte win game three and make that a series? Are there any other series that you think, there could be something to it? Or, I mean, we're going to wrap up the show here quick, but
sure.
Any of that or any last thoughts or overall thoughts so far?
I did want to get one more note. Sure. One more note in on the Blazers, and that is, on the flip side, the compliments Chris Paul. You hear about how he does a very good job of being incredibly pesky and grabbing and pulling a person, never getting called fouls for it. It's rare to see Damian Lillard get into a funk. At one point in game two, he was like 4 of 17 or 18. And when I heard that, my ears like shattered. I'm like, what? Like, Lillard's 4 of like 18? Like, is that for real? So as much as I'm optimistic on it, maybe you'll get a little home cooking from the refs. But I think as much as I enjoy the Blazers, if Paul's been able to get up in Lillard's grill, that series easily could, on the other hand, just be a very shortened series. So maybe some home officiating could benefit him, because if Damian Lillard's shooting 4 of 19 and that continues, it'll be idiotic for me to predict it would go 7. I guess one thing I want to see, Chris, as we mentioned a little bit ago, is I want to see what Oklahoma City team comes out on next time they play the Thunder, or next time they play the Mavs. You know, is this an Oklahoma City team that knows they're better, that basically ran them out the gym game one, had complete control last night? Or are they going to have another hiccup where you're like, dude, Billy Donovan, like, what are you doing? Like, what happened with Durant and Westbrook? I want to see if they maybe have that mindset of, all right, guys, we need to take care of business and get our stuff together. Let's do it. I think that you're going to be, and like you said, their team basically is what it is, but I don't think you can have another hiccup. You need to get your momentum going, because you're going to play either probably the Warriors or Clippers or Spurs. And, they can hang with all three. I mean, they're going to be an underdog in Vegas, but I want to see if Durant and Westbrook are like, guys, let's get our shit together. Let's take care of Dallas, beat them in five, and then get ready for the next round. or is it going to be a fourth quarter meltdown? I think that's one game I'm excited to see. And I guess for the Heat and Hornets, I would kind of compare that, Chris, to the Boston-Atlanta series. You have a team in Miami who's got a ton of vets. You got a hell of a veteran coach. You know, you got the GM. You got all the pieces there. Meanwhile, Charlotte's kind of come onto the scene. They're a fun team to watch. They play good defense. They chuck the three really well, but they're new to it. So I think as much as I told, like, Stevens, you need to kind of get your playoff experience and get the people together, you got a pretty damn good veteran team. And I know Goran Dragic hasn't made the playoffs, but the guy's a vet. He knows how to play. You know, they got that Justice Winslow. They strung nice on their draft. So I think it's kind of the same idea of this could be a good stepping stone for Charlotte and for Boston in the East to build from a playoff defeat, possibly in the first round series, and make your team better down the road.
So let's say that Oklahoma City does close out. Does that really change your mind that they can beat the Spurs? Because that's who they'd meet next, right? The Spurs.
Oklahoma City actually faces the Warriors, or do they reseed?
Okay, I was wrong then. I thought they got the Spurs, but either way, I mean, I guess Curry would, you know, that would be a fill-in. I guess you could always play the Curry angle because if he's not healthy or whatever. But if they do close it out in Game 5, what's that really mean? I mean, yeah, personally, that's nice, but so they closed out a team they were supposed to maybe sweep. I guess I'm wondering if it's too late to build this false confidence at this point.
Well, I think that's a fair question, but I just think you need to see that. You know, when you've heard all year that they're the third best team in the NBA, well, frickin' prove it. And if you are going to face the Warriors, you better be going, you know, full bore. Like if they go to 7 with Dallas, it's like, really? You know, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm digging pretty deep into the psyche of the Oklahoma City Thunder, but for all the accolades and compliments they get, it's, you know, can they finally kind of get everything together and be that team that can run up and down the court? Because Westbrook and Durant are a pain in the butt to guard, and the pieces are there. But I just think that I guess it would mean something to me if they would come out and just kind of kick butt and wrap this thing up. Or again, the Thunder who have been this year of like, okay, this one's going to go back to 6 or 7 and deal with Dallas. Like, you know, I don't know.
Sure.
It just seems to me, Chris, like they've regressed this year due to a rookie coach and their fourth quarter flaws. So it would be nice.
Well, regressed from what, though? Like from the finals year?
Regressed from the team of the last couple of years, yeah. Just because of the defensive issues, which obviously
I mean, they were always – the defensive issues were always there. And even in their prime – or as a team, I should say, because, you know, a lot of players are in the prime. But I guess that's the kind of in-between on that. And real quick, rest in peace to Prince, obviously, local legend for music. A lot of people, you know, really giving a love all across the world. It really shows you the influence, over 100 million sold. A lot of wide variety of music and people he played with and helped. You know, he did a lot of songs that people liked in the last, you know, 30 years that you didn't even know. He wrote it, and he also did a lot of activism that nobody even knew, and now you're starting to see, hey, you know what, this school stayed open because of him, but he didn't want anybody to know. But now people are finally, since he, you know, if he passed, they do want to be like, hey, he was an activist, he was just really quiet with it, he wasn't out front, he was really doing a lot of stuff on the low. And then obviously, you know, it was a really high to low back-to-back days in Minnesota, because you had a big hiring with Thibodeau to be all, you know, really excited and happy. And then Prince passed too. So I do want to throw that in there as well. Rest in peace to Prince. And then Thibodeau, it'll be something that we talk about, you know, more in our draft and free agency stuff as we start to look at what the top team, you know, need and all that. So just wanted to get that in there before we get out of here. Are there any last words you want to talk about, man?
I'll just say this. I do hope we get one game seven. You know, I know that the first round, we're not expecting a whole lot. There weren't a lot of expected upsets, but it'll be fun to at least get one game seven, because I think reasonably right now, you could expect there to be none, but it would be at least fun to get one game seven, just because that is kind of like, okay, it's game seven. Who's going to step up? Like, what's going to happen? Give us a little something. I don't see the Grizzlies forcing the game seven, but if Curry's lingering, who knows? Maybe you do have a game seven in Oracle. So I'm with you. I thought today was fun. We'll see how these teams, you know, does Oklahoma until you step up? Does Curry play? Does Stanley Johnson continue to get in LeBron's head and cause him issues?
Getting LeBron? You mean the other way around? Yeah, there ain't causing much issues on his end.
I do love Stanley Johnson saying, well, I tie my shoes the same way LeBron does. Well, God bless you. That's actually damn true.
Otherwise, you're an alien or something.
So at least you can get some good press clips from from Detroit-Cleveland series. And what final note, Chris, it will be interesting to see how teams do the hack a person. I did see it happen with Dwight last night. Obviously, it's been happening with DeAndre. That could be something that, you know, can cause games to change, and maybe that will cause the rule to change if that does affect a couple playoff games. I know that Adam Silver keeps this whole year has been mentioning how he's closer and closer to changing a rule. If we get like a Golden State, or if we get like a Spurs and Clippers series and Popovich fouls DeAndre 25 times a game, which could happen, that could be maybe the final icing. I don't know what you do to change the rule, but maybe for a side on the playoffs, let's see how the hack a rule person goes, because that is something that people always talk about, and that could maybe this year could maybe be the final straw and deliver a rule change for next year. But Chris and I will be back next week. I hope that Curry's healthy and we can discuss a Golden State team that's won their series, but who knows? As you mentioned, Chris, maybe it is a serious injury, or if he comes out and Beverly gets in his face, he maybe does tweak it. I pray he doesn't. I'd love to see a potential back-to-back run, but without Curry, that's tough. So take care. Again, I'm with you. Rest in peace, Prince. This whole year we've had to been saying rest in peace for during college football seasons and now NBA too. So I'd like to take a break on saying RIP. That's not that fun. But God bless. Enjoy the weekend. Watch your hoops. And thank you for listening. Peace.